So this is our Friday night prayer meeting. We're going to be going through several sections of Daily with TLS and Sparks, beginning with May 22nd through the 28th, for our own review and consideration of the theme of suffering as we find it in the Word and, of course, in our lives. So we'll just begin with May 22nd, and it's titled, The Need and Value of Suffering. Let it be settled once and for all that the sufferings of Christ are an absolute necessity. I'm going to say a very strong thing, and it is this, that if you know nothing about the sufferings of Christ, there is something wrong with you as a Christian. I am not, of course, speaking of such as have only just entered upon the Christian life, though suffering is sometimes encountered right from the first. But obedience and faithfulness soon lead to the experience of some form of Christ's sufferings. If you are avoiding those sufferings, if you are rebelling against them, and you are taking an entirely wrong line, they are the true lot of the children of God. I do not say that you will each have them in the same measure or of the same kind, but you will have them. Ask the Lord if your bad times may not, after all, fit into this. Brother Kong was talking about that in one of his messages here we just listened to recently. You have been thinking of them merely as circumstances, as disappointments, working out to your misfortune, your disadvantage. But wait, see whether these are not, after all, bound up with your spiritual life, whether they do not bear a relationship to your spiritual growth. Interrogate yourself. Examine this question. Sufferings are necessary for several things. First of all, to keep things real, practical, and up to date. The Lord is not going to allow any of us to live upon a past, upon a theory, upon a tradition, upon a doctrine as a doctrine. He will allow us to live only on what is real and practical and up to date, and being made as we are, we do not so live unless we are made to. If I know even a little bit about the Lord and the Lord's things, we could say our dealings, I can tell you perfectly frankly, it is because of suffering. I could not and would not have learned unless the Lord had made me learn and taught me in a very deep and practical school where things were kept right up to date and where every bit of ministry sprang out of some new experience. It is a law which applies to us all. The fact is that these sufferings are absolutely essential to keep things real. People have a right to ask, how did you know that? Have you proved that? Or, in other words, have you tested that in your own life? How much has that been to you in the deepest hours of life when things were beyond your power? Did that prove to be true then? If we are not able to say with all our heart in utter sincerity, I found the Lord to be like that, I have put that truth to a thorough test and proved it, then we are frauds. The Lord has no place for frauds, therefore he keeps us up to date. Reality is by suffering. And not just frauds, but it could even involve hypocrisy, teaching one thing and not actually living the reality of it. May 23rd, growth and ability by suffering. Progress and growth are also secured by sufferings. All nature declares it. Growth, development, increase is by that expanding power which creates a creak and a groan and an ache within the organism. And in the spiritual life, it is like that. We speak about growing pains. I believe that is considered to be unscientific now, but it is a very useful phrase. Yes, there are growing pains, and the sufferings of Christ in members of his body are related to growth. The difference is this, that in what we have called growing pains, it is the growing that is actually taking place which causes the pains. While here, and what we have before us, it is the pains which produce the growth afterward. We grow by means of suffering. There is no doubt about it. We can, or we know that sufferings, according to what Paul wrote, and I think in 1 Thessalonians 3, he was concerned that the enemy had so misinterpreted the sufferings to the saints there that they would defect and turn away from the Lord. So he was concerned about them not understanding the nature of sufferings. Since I made reference to that, I'll just read it, because I think it's interesting that they were, as a young church, were suffering persecution because of their faithfulness, because they had a strong testimony in the Lord. He says in 1 Thessalonians 1:6, you also became imitators of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much tribulation with the joy of the Holy Spirit. So much tribulation. Verse 17 of chapter 2. But we, brethren, having been bereft of you for a short while, in person but not in spirit, were all the more eager with great desire to see your face. For we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, more than once, yet Satan thwarted us. For who is our hope and our joy or crown of exaltation, that is, victor's wreath at the bema seat of Christ? Is it not even you, in the presence of our Lord Jesus at his coming? For you are our glory and joy. Therefore, when we could endure it no longer, we thought it best to be left behind at Athens alone. And we sent Timothy, our brother and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as to your faith, so that no man may be disturbed, literally deceived, by these afflictions. In other words, you're suffering, and there's affliction. The enemy would not deceive you by these afflictions. It means pressure and testing. For you yourselves know that we have been destined for this. Strong word, destined. The divine appointment. For indeed, when we were with you, we kept on telling you in advance that we were going to suffer affliction, and so it came to pass, as you know. For this reason, when we could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor should be in vain. In other words, he would put an interpretation on the sufferings that would cause them to defect from the faith. God doesn't care. It would ultimately be something maligning the character of God. But now Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us, just as we also long to see you. For this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. For now we really live, if you stand firm in the Lord. And that's an important issue with anyone that has any concern for God's people, is are they standing firm in the Lord? And that's why we do this, why we're taking time to do this. Because we as an assembly have been through, in some respects, a unique kind of testing and affliction this last year that is unique and unprecedented. And so we really need to be shored up and understand God's purpose and be reminded of God's purpose and sufferings. So, as he said, it's the pain we're in is actually taking place which causes the pains. While here, and what we have before us, it is the pains which produce the growth afterwards. So the context of suffering is the context in how we grow. We grow by means of suffering, there is no doubt about it. Show me a mature spiritual life, you show me the embodiment of much suffering of some kind. Not always physical, a life which has gone through things. Paul found his turning point there, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. He's speaking from 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 8 and following. Why do we have this sentence of death in ourselves? And that we despaired even of life, so that we should not trust in ourselves, but God who raises the dead. A new discovery from the depths, where he touched bottom. He discovered God in a new way. God who raises the dead. Again, 2 Corinthians 1, 8 and following. Such knowing of him comes along that line. The values of suffering are there. But then note what he says again. God, who comforts us in all our affliction, that we may be able, that is, to comfort others with the comfort by which we are comforted of God. That is found in 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 through 7. Oh, there's a lot in that. That speaks of stock and trade. That means for service, does it not? We may have had bad times about our lack of ability in many ways, comparing ourselves with other people and deploring our lack of ability in this and that. Oh, for ability. Or in other words, increased capacity. But what is the greatest ability after all? The best and most fruitful ability is to be able to help people in the deep experiences of spiritual life, to be able to explain to them the meaning of God's dealings with them, to be able to show them what is intended to be the outcome of it all, what is God's design in the suffering, and to be able to give them some support by counsel which comes from real knowledge, some of that comfort which we ourselves have received of God. Again, that's 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 through 7. That is real service. That is building up the body of Christ, the house of God, being really able in a spiritual way to strengthen the sorrowing and to comfort the sorrowing. That comes through suffering. May 24th. the suffering within the sufferings. There are sufferings and the suffering, the plural and the singular. The suffering that is the suffering which is within the sufferings. Sometimes it is the suffering which brings about the sufferings. Take Paul, for instance, and the suffering for which he refers in 2 Corinthians 1, 8-10. He speaks of our affliction which we encountered or befell us in Asia. The word affliction there is from a Latin root which means a flail, and it pictures the wielding of a flail upon the naked body of a bound man, bruising and breaking and battering. It is a strong word. Paul says that is what happened to him in Asia, weighed down exceedingly, beyond our power, insomuch that we despaired even of life. That means he was depressed. Yea, we ourselves have had the sentence of death within ourselves. Why? That we might not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. We had the answer to our inquiry. The answer was, it is death. In other words, deliver, apokrino. God's answer was, sentence to death, Paul, until you might learn in a deeper way not to trust in yourself, but in God who raises the dead. Now that is the suffering within the sufferings. Do not think for a moment that that was just a physical matter. A man who could go through all those experiences which are recorded of Paul, and who could say that to depart and to be with Christ was far better, was not afraid of dying. Not at all. There must have been some suffering within the sufferings, weighed down exceedingly beyond our power. That was something inward. In other words, there's the suffering, what's going on externally, but then what's going on internally? That's the suffering within the sufferings. So weighed down exceedingly beyond our power, that was something inward. It was not because he was desperately ill and might die at any moment. What then is this? It may have been due to the report that came to him of conditions in Corinth. For it was at this time that he received the news of the terrible state of things in Corinth recorded in these letters. And he speaks of that which presseth me daily, anxiety for all the churches, 2 Corinthians 11:28. Even if it was physical sickness that assailed him, we know that sickness in the body is very often caused by grief of heart. The outward sufferings are sometimes a result of inward distress. Thus we have the suffering within the sufferings. May 25th, Paul's spiritual suffering. Here is a spiritual suffering for Christ's sake. And that which Paul speaks of as the sentence of death, though beyond our explanation, yet does seem to suggest that he got into a terrible state spiritually because of certain conditions. If I were to try to reshape this situation, I should say Paul had received this terribly bad news about the state of the things, that is, the very poor spiritual state of the things in the church at Corinth, with perhaps from other directions as well, and he had gone down under his suffering and said, is it worth it? Is it not all in vain? You know, Jesus asked the same question when he was here on earth on his mission. You can read it in Isaiah 49. Have I come in vain? When he looked around and saw all around him, it was as if the mission was failing. You can read it in Isaiah 49. Is it all in vain? Is it not an utterly hopeless situation? Am I not wasting my life and pouring out for such people? When you start like that, there is no end. You can go down and down until waters of despair gradually close over you. You try to pray and you cannot, for a doubting man can never pray. He may cry, but he cannot pray. A man who has let go to that sort of thing cannot pray. Heaven is closed. And Paul, so to speak, interrogates himself and says, what is the meaning of this? The answer is, it is death along that line. It is death. If you get down there, there's no way through and no way up. That is the end of everything. Death. My point at the moment is that death here was spiritual and not physical. By the way, when Jesus responded to Peter's confession of the Father's revelation of who Christ was, he says, and I say to you, Peter, Petros, a small fragment of the rock, upon this rock, this massive rock, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. The gates of Hades represents the counsels and the power of spiritual death. Those are the gates. And I think someone was talking, I don't remember where I was reading or hearing it, but I think Brother Kong mentioned it, that the gates of Hades, the counsels of spiritual death, and the powers of spiritual death are unleashed against the church. So if we are moving together as a local assembly, then we're going to encounter those strategies of the evil one, And the life that's in us, individually and corporally, is designed to be tested by God and to come out in a place of ascendancy over those powers. And how does that happen? By persevering, by continuing on. You don't stop. You just keep going. And that's one of the reasons why when we were in the midst of so much of this pressure, I said, we're going to add a night. We're not only going to continue on, but we're going to do a section of discipline by grace. And in the midst of the pressure, we don't back off. We're going to continue to press in, allow the Lord to impart truth to us. So my point is, at the moment, is that here, in Paul's statement, was spiritual, not physical. He was tasting something of the real nature of death, the counsels of death. Death is a sense of being excluded, or we could add that, alienated from God, of heaven being closed, of there being no way through and no way out, shut up and shut in at the end of everything, and that registered in upon your soul. Paul talks about that in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 7 through 12. That is more than physical death. Some of us, more than once, would have been glad to die physically. But this other thing is spiritual death, and it is terrible. It is awful. There is no gladness about that. To taste that is to know something of the sufferings of Christ. Those sufferings may be known along other lines, but we are not attempting here to define in detail the whole range of Christ's sufferings, but only to stress the fact of them. And May 26, an inheritance of the suffering of Christ. Little need be said, I think, as to the fact of the sufferings. We know the people of God are not exempt from sufferings. That, I think, need not be labored. But there are many sufferings into which they enter because they are the people of God, and that perhaps needs a little talking about. There are sufferings we may bring upon ourselves, sufferings which need not be, but I'm not talking about those. I'm speaking about the sufferings of Christ, of the fact of these, and that they are the common lot of the people of God, and that when they come upon us, there is nothing wrong with that. But when you think about these sufferings, with Paul as the great example and interpreter, you are led to see that these are not just incidents, local or earthly things. Even when they take legal and earthly form and coloring by reason of situations and circumstances and events, they have a far greater range than anything incidental, local, temporal, or earthly. So just think about the last 9 months. What's the context? It's not just about what's going on here. There's something corporate going on. There's something on a global level, and we're a part of that in a very significant way, as we've come to learn. How many churches are named in the council in Jerusalem? How many have a counterfeit representation of themselves in Jerusalem? We don't know, but we know we're represented there. There's a satanic representation of who we are. Now, why would they be doing that? Because there's that which represents a purpose that we are seeking to follow in the Lord as an assembly, and to not give up and to keep pressing through to that which represents the calling that we represent as an assembly. The eternal purpose of God and everything that would seek to thwart the realization of that eternal purpose is something that we must confront and overcome and come into ascendancy. So when you think about these sufferings, with Paul as a great example and interpreter, you are led to see that these are not just incidents, local or earthly things. Even when they take legal and earthly form and coloring by reason of situations and circumstances and events, they have a far greater range than anything incidental, local, temporal, or earthly. The range of these sufferings is no less than the spiritually universal. In other words, principalities and powers in the heavenly places. World rulers of this present darkness, Ephesians 6:10. They reach out beyond ourselves, our circle, our lives, our time, and beyond anything here and now. I would use the word dispensational, but it's being perhaps misunderstood. Paul's sufferings comprehended the dispensation and are virtuous today after so many centuries and have touched every realm of the celestial and the diabolical. In other words, what Paul went through was not only for his generation, but we're still deriving the benefit today of the sufferings he went through. They're universal. They weren't just local. What he went through, are we not benefiting by those experiences even today? So the principle is true for any assembly and people are sharing the sufferings of Christ. Paul's sufferings comprehended the dispensation and are virtues today after so many centuries and have touched every realm of the celestial and the diabolical. Celestial be the spiritual, the heavenly. These sufferings are more than just incidents in life, painful as they may be. They are set within a vast realm of significance and effectiveness. They are, in the main, the kickback of a vast and mighty system of antagonism to everything that is of Christ. We must therefore accept the fact of such sufferings and adjust to the spiritual significance of it. If you and I ever do get the idea that the Christian life is to be a perpetual picnic, we shall get ourselves into all kinds of difficulties and perplexities and disappointments. If we seek to escape from the sufferings of Christ, we're going to cut the very vitals of our spiritual worthwhileness. In other words, fruitfulness. Take heed to that. We have to accept the fact that, being the Lord's here, our inheritance is an inheritance of the sufferings of Christ, and we must not seek to avoid them. And we don't seek them, but certainly we can't control circumstances which involve suffering. May 27th, inward relationship through suffering. The very heart of suffering, the very heart of co-heirship with Christ, that is, ruling and reigning with Him in the ages to come, is this wonderful sense of inward relationship to the object in view, inward relationship to the inheritance, inward relationship to the result, the reward. And that is the explanation of suffering, of labor, of conflict. The Lord does not just give to us without cost. He always brings us into the cost of that which He is going to give. It will be grace all the way through, but He brings us into the cost of the reward. In the end, let us repeat, we shall acknowledge that any part we have had in it of suffering, labor, warfare, has been infinitely outweighed by what He has given, and that is where grace will always be our theme. But I do believe that mingled with our gratitude will be this sense that the Lord enabled us to achieve, that He did not act without us and apart from us. He brought us into it, and there will be this deep inward heart-relatedness to the result, the eternal fruit that we share with Him, the gratification. That is the very heart of suffering, I believe. We have labored for, suffered for, travailed for, become something over which we are very jealous. Suffering for anything is a very purifying thing. Take the matter of a child for which there has been suffering, travail. While other people who have not so suffered and travailed and gone through for the child can see all the defects and pass all the criticisms and arrive at their judgments, good or bad, about that child, and just stand apart and say their say about the child. But the mother may see very little of that. There is something for the mother which transcends all that. There is nothing that is precious to the Lord and which He would make the property of His people, but there will be suffering for it. That is proper to being substance, something in hand. It will only become their property in that sense as they suffer for it. And then woe betide who criticizes that. If you are detached from a thing, if you are detached from a testimony, from a work of God, you can do all the criticizing you like. You have no inward heart relationship to it, and so you pass your judgments upon it. But if you are in it and you have suffered, if it has been a costly thing where you are concerned, then you are seeing more than all the failings, more than all those faults. The people who can criticize like that and judge and point out faults are the people who have not suffered. And then finally, May 28th, joint heirs with Christ through sufferings. We're heirs of God, joint heirs with Christ, provided that, if so be that, we suffer, literally, in fellowship with Him in order that we may be glorified in fellowship with Him. The preposition is more than just with. Romans 8:17. This is not just an official thing, something that is a gratuitous gift in a mechanical way, as much as to say, well, you have done a bit of work, here are your wages. That thing has been wrought or worked out in us through suffering and the cost and the warfare and the labor. And there is this sense of an inward co-heirship with Christ if we suffer. Co-heirship means co-inheritors. Remember in the Old Testament, to go in and displace the enemy, that was conflict. It had nothing to do with redemption, that was in Egypt. But to go in and possess the inheritance, it involves conflict, it involves suffering, and the fight of faith. It's the inheritance. It will be a very blessed thing to us who know how much we are dependent upon the grace of God, how little we can even bear without the support of His grace. It will be a wonderful thing when at last He says, "This is the reward of your suffering." We shall say, "Well, after all, it was our light affliction in the light of the far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory." 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 18 and following. Talks about this exceeding heavy weight of glory that's the outcome of our sufferings. Well, how have we earned this? But there will be some gratification in recognizing that the Lord has taken account of what we have gone through, and He's brought us into a sense of His own gratification and given us to feel, well, it was not in vain. It was not for naught. That is not without a purpose. Why did I read those passages in the Old Testament from Numbers and Joshua? I don't know what he's referring to there, but we will be looking at the inheritance in the days ahead around Laodicea. So why did I read those passages in the Old Testament from Numbers and Joshua? They both have to do with inheritance. I read them for this reason, that here were people who, in the first place, were concerned, were jealous for the inheritance. And then there were people who were prepared to enter into the cost of the inheritance, after which, when they had got it, it was theirs. Yes, it was the Lord's, but it was theirs. You see what I mean? It is theirs. And many of us have gone through the years in toil, in suffering, in labor, and warfare in the Lord's interest. And if there is anything that comes out of that at all, it is ours. In this sense, that we are jealous over it with a right kind of jealousy. It belongs to us in the Lord. Yes, it is the Lord's, but it belongs to us in the Lord, in union with the Lord, the fruit of suffering and of travail and of cost. Your faithfulness in prayer, in prayer gatherings, it is not without cost that you continue like that. Your faithfulness in the upholding of those who go out, it costs. Taking the years over, it is not without price, if there is anything. The Lord has given it to us as your inheritance. That is yours. All that eternal spiritual value is yours in Christ.